Man, go. I want to see his people. They told me that the topic of this meeting was AA spirituality. And the only way I can share spirituality with you is to share my story. To share what I was like before Narcotics Anonymous, what it was like after I found Narcotics Anonymous. I was a product of a upper middle class home outside of D.C. I was also a product of the post-war baby boom. If anybody's got a calculator, find out how old I am. For the first 6-7 years of my life, it was normal. I was endowed with the same aspirations, the same principles, the same goals, I wanted to grow up and change the world. I wanted to grow up and get my little piece of the world and be like my father. And something happened along the way. It didn't matter to me. I mean, I didn't know the difference, but people began to tell me that I was different. People began to tell me that I didn't fit. And I looked at them like they were crazy. I had the same feelings. I had the same insights. And I looked at them like they were crazy. And I asked one of the guys I used to hang out with, why? Why am I so different? Why do you look at me and tell me I'm different than you? He said, well, you're crippled. And that's the first time I heard that. And I was like 10, 11 years old. And when I was born, God graced me with two things, a loving mother and a loving father. And they both said, just because your legs don't work doesn't mean your brain doesn't work. Go ahead and do whatever you damn please. So, I did. And the spirit they endowed me with, the principles they gave me, the principles I was born with, helped me, and it also drove me to the fellowship. It also drove me to 17 to 20 years of active addiction. And that's not what I want to talk about. but I have to because it's part of me. Okay? Through my teenage years, I began to wake up and I began to have feelings of a normal male adolescent. And I had this thing in the back of my mind that I was crippled. I had a feeling that I didn't know how to deal with it. And a magical thing came along. A chemical came along. The chemical at the time was alcohol. Let's get Bill loaded and see how crazy he can be. Let's get Bill loaded and see what kind of asshole we can make out of himself. And I did. And the feelings of inadequacy, the feelings of not being good enough, the feelings of low self-esteem, the feelings of why me, they were all there. They were all there, but I didn't care. I didn't care. And somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm going to slow down because I'm breathing heavy. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I still had those principles that my mother and father endowed me with. And I was growing up. And something happened. This post-war baby turned into a hippie and began to fit, began to search for causes, began to search for outside fixes to fix me. And like most people say, well, I just was in it for the drugs and the free love. I don't know, maybe I was stupid, but I believed in something. I believed in those principles that they talked about in that generation. But it became increasingly difficult for me to do something. Became increasingly difficult for me to keep getting loaded and keep practicing principles. Yeah. There came a point in time when it's like a gunfight, the old take a row. They walk down Main Street and they say, this town ain't big enough for both of us. One of us gotta go. And it ain't gonna be the drugs. So I began to prostitute my principles. I began to sell them to the highest bidder for a fix. And it took me a while. It took me the better part of 20 years. But I did a good job. I sold every last one. I sold all of mine and some of yours. See, I had a real neat tool. I had a chair. And I used to say I didn't use this chair to get what I wanted. I said that for years in my recovery. And then something happened. I remembered. don't know whether I remembered or I got eyes. Doesn't really matter. But I did. I used this chair in subtle ways. So subtle, it even baffled me at times. I used this chair to get whatever I needed, when I needed, for how long, for however long I needed. Oh, poor baby, you know, she won't take you home. Yeah. She won't buy you drinks. She won't get you loaded. I used to run a scam that I was a Vietnam vet and had a ship blown out of somebody. And I used to walk rolling the bars. And that worked for years. Something happened. The chemicals that were my best friend, my lover, my mother, my father, my God, turned on me. They didn't work anymore. They said, we got you where we want you, and we're leaving. We're taking the house, the car, the soul, the wheelchair, the heart, the life, the breath, and we're leaving. You can't do anything to stop us. And there was a little voice inside me. Stop. Stop. I want to stop eating. I want to quit. And I could always stop eating. I could always stop eating. The thing about it was I couldn't stay stopped. I could always stop using for 3 hours and 55 minutes and 25 seconds. That was my test. If I could do that, I wasn't that addict. The neighbors, my mother, my family, the psychiatrist, the self-help group down the street, all told me I had a problem. Maybe you ought to do something about your life. You look like shit. I said, excuse me? This image wouldn't allow me to get off of, I know. It wouldn't allow me to vocalize, I know, I'm hurting, I need help. But inside, that little voice said, yeah, I gotta have help. They always identify the problem, but they never gave me a solution. They always told me how bad I was doing, how bad I felt, how bad I looked, how bad I stunk, how green my teeth were. But they never gave me a toothbrush. They never gave me a bar of soap. They never gave me deodorant. They never gave me a 12-step program that talks about addiction. I came in. To the other fellowship, okay, which I'm forever grateful. They let me sit there and bitch and moan about I'm an addict, and we don't like addicts here. I said, but I don't have any other place to go. I gotta stay here. Get out. Fuck you. I ain't leaving. They said, there's no such thing as ass. That's my running partner. I was warming a seat. I was holding on for dear life. I was scared of life itself. But even that was better. Even that self-abuse, the external abuse, my own internal abuse, was better than the hell of my active addiction. So I sit there. And I remember sitting there with my running partner, my early recovery. And we used to say, no, we gotta go to the damn clubhouse to get it. It ain't working. Let's give it 2 more weeks. It ain't gonna work. We know what's out there. We'll go back out there and take care of some of this pain. Sitting in our AA clubhouse. Holding down chairs. White knuckle. Man, those white elbows. I heard it at the front desk. This little guy come walking through the door. Who is this guy? He looked like Charlie Brown. With a peanut teller. Skinny. Southern accent. Hi, I'm Greg, I'm an addict. The guy at the front desk, so we don't have addicts here. He said, no, I'm an addict, I just moved here from Atlanta. Where are the area meetings? He said, we don't have any. I kind of mosey on over in his direction. And I ask him, I said, excuse me, but what is this thing? Oh, Narcotics Anonymous? And he pulled out this little white book. He said, here, read it. He said, since I'm going to the University of Maryland, I need to have a support group. And if you're interested, the first meeting will be started on Wednesday night. And I said, well, I don't know. You know, that's my disease. Even as complaining and bitching as I was, I still didn't know. I still had fear. So my running partner went. First 2 weeks, he said, man, you are spineless figure. I talk about disease. I talk about feelings. They don't tell you to walk. They don't tell you to get out. They don't tell you to leave. They don't tell you to put the plug in the jug. And I went, okay, I'll go. If it don't work, I can go back to my seat and hold on for dear life. So, I went. And the guy said, I came up to Greg and I asked him, so I'm curious, what's this program? I don't know where I'm narcotics addict or not. So what, you ever do drugs, you ever shoot needles? Yeah, but the hospital got me hooked. I'm hooked on morphine. You ever do pot? Yeah, I grew a little bit in my bedroom window, but that's all right. You ever do Play-Doh? Yeah, if they did a random blood testing like they do in D.C. now, I would have smoked the whole thing. And then he laid a line on me. He said, it don't matter. Wonder how much you use or who you're connected to. All that matters is what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. For the first time in 34 years, I felt a part of. I felt at home. There was one meeting. 6 weeks later, there was two meetings. I went back to the clubhouse. They told me to get lost. I said, as soon as there's 7 narcotics and hours, meetings a week, you won't see me ever again. There is 7 weeks. They haven't seen me. I don't hold grudges against the fellowship anymore. Narcotics Anonymous has healed me. I just know where I belong. I just know where my home is. I just know where I feel part of. Let's see. That original area is now a region plus, and we got 500-600 meetings. Third largest region in the world. And it all started with one. Yeah. I spent the first 3 years of my recovery saying how spiritual I was. I'm clean. Isn't that great? I used to call my bill collectors, I'm going to cut off the phone. I'm going to cut off the light bill. I'm going to cut off the gas. You can't do that. I'm recovering that. I'm clean. I'm on a mission. You know what those ungrateful people did? They turned my shit off. I said, we don't care. When you send us the money, we'll turn it back off. $600 phone bills. But you don't understand, the phone is my life. Yeah. I went around acting so spiritual, I made myself sick. I got spirituality from other people. I helped other people, but inside that old security, that old low self-esteem, that ego, that gut full of razor blades was still there. It was working for every gut person in there. But it wasn't working for me. I used to travel. We used to be part of Mid-Atlantic. And before too long, in the beginning, the closest Thursday night meeting was Jersey City, New Jersey. I used to pile newcomers in cars. There's a friend of mine, he's no longer with us, but there's a friend of mine that used to work for VA Hospital in New Jersey. He said, "Billy, we need help. We need support. The meet is dying here." I used to pile newcomers in the car and say, "We're going to meet." 3 hours up 95, he used to say, "Where the hell is this meet?" I made that meeting on a regular basis, once a month. One car load, two car loads, until we started our Thursday night meeting. And then our Thursday night meeting, we started with 70 miles, one way. But it was Narcotics Anonymous. I ran around fixing people. I ran around saying how wonderful the steps were in my life. I ran around talking, but not acting. Newcomers were getting wise. They said, "Your words don't match your actions. You talk so spiritual, but your house is like shit." And they weren't talking about my house, my physical house. They were talking about my insides. And well, when it comes from a newcomer, I had a friend in Harrisburg. He used to see me on a regular basis. We used to go to meetings together. And he had 5 years clean. And I was scared to ask him to be my sponsor. And the sponsor I had, we just didn't get along after a while. So I was hurting so bad, he called me one night. And in my early recovery, for the first 4 years, I went to a meeting every night. And he knew not to call me between 7:30 and 10 o'clock. Because he wouldn't be there. I wouldn't be there. Quarter after 8 one night, phone rang. I picked the phone up. He said, "Hi, how are you?" I said, "I'm fine." I said, "The area's fine, the region's growing, people are sponsoring it better." He said, "Hi, how are you?" And I went through the same process. 4 times. And I finally got what he meant. He was really asking how I was. He said, "If you're so fine, what are you doing home?" I asked that man to be my sponsor. And for the next 3 years, he was. One of the gifts he's given me during those 3 years, he grabbed me. He said, "I don't give a shit whether you're in a chair on the floor under the chair. He's going to stop using that chair as his shoes. And he grabbed me and he said, we're going to go through the steps one at a time, and I'll tell you when you're finished. So, there's 24 spiritual principles in this program, and you're not going to get off step one until you tell me what the principle is behind that step, and step two, what the principle is behind that step. And he went up. He said, well, man, don't you understand? I got 5 years clean. I'm on a mission. My eyes look like tombstones. You ever see a practicing act or a newcomer who's deathly afraid? Gosh, they look like tombstones. I'm all right. This is wrong with me. It's fake. It's fantastic. No. That's how it was. For 5 years. Until we learned about the steps. And he introduced me. It was not a popular practice back in my area. But he introduced me to a process which I use today, and the sponsor I have now uses today. It's writing your stuff. Because I can run a good game on it. If something happens when I put that pencil and paper in my hand, it's between God and me. And he began to teach me about principles. He began to teach me about the surrender that we find in step one. After we surrender, how do we go on? What do we find in step two that teaches us that wants us to give us the strength that we need to continue in our recovery. What is it? It's a hope. A principle of hope. When you walk in and see one other act, in a meeting, staying clean. Something that you can do ever in life. Then the hope turns into faith. And the third step. And the faith turns into honesty. You got enough faith to be honest enough to register searching and fearless more inventory. And then you got enough faith and honesty in your guts to actually turn around and share it with God, another human being, and yourself. I mean, I don't know about you, but those are the things I couldn't do. And then you have the willingness to just say, God, I'm tired. I've had it. I surrendered. He protected. And it turns into humility. And when that humility comes, you become right with yourself. And anybody in the world can drop an atom bomb around you, and it don't matter. They can call me a motherfucker, and motherfucker is spiritual, right? You can say that with malice or with love. It depends on how you say it. And then you turn into forgiveness, and that comes in the eighth and ninth step. Me forgiving somebody else for what they did to me? That's how I used to think. It's your fault. If you weren't so self-centered, if you weren't so weak to get along, And then the freedom comes. The freedom that I talk about so much, I still feel like I have razor blades in my stomach. There's no razor blades in my stomach. I'm free. And the spiritual principle of meditation, of going back in oneself and enjoying what enjoying what you find there. You know, having a clean enough house to love to go there. I don't know about you, but for 20 years, man, I did everything not to go there. I ran. I kicked. I screamed. But I don't want to be with myself. Today, I can be with myself. I enjoy being around new people, but I enjoy when I get to this program, I'm being with myself. Today, I am free. And I want to talk about some things, okay? I want to talk about the spiritual part of this program, okay? First time I talked about spirituality, I was sitting on a mountain in Virginia, and I was so spiritual I made myself sick. Because I talked about matters I didn't know. I talked about white robes and sandals and nails in my hands. Yeah. I want to talk about the spiritual part of that, the spiritual part of this program. The spiritual part of this program for me is the minute I walked in the doors of Narcotics Anonymous and said, I'm an addict. It doesn't start with step three. The most spiritual action in my life is my surrender to my disease. Because that's something that I couldn't do for years. I held on, you know, and even that was part of my disease. I thought it was just enough, excuse me, man. I can do that today, too. I used to throw coffee on the first five people on the road. Spiritual part of this program begins with surrender. And I thought this program was just another scam to get my money. I thought this program, I said, okay, these people are cool, but they're going to come and they're going to get my money somehow. And they stopped the meeting right in the middle and they passed the basket. I said, okay, here it is. I got you. I was part of writing a book that saved my life on a daily basis. I don't know whether anybody's read that book, but it's a bestseller. It's called The Basic Text of Narcotics Anonymous. And in that book, God and the group conscious of Narcotics Anonymous placed certain things. Better than I could ever do. I'm a writer. But something happened during my disease. I lost the ability to write. I found it in a small town in Ohio. through tears and a lot of prayer. But in that book, there's a phrase, definition of a higher power. We don't care. The only definition of a higher power is that they be loving and caring and greeting yourself. And she is. Okay. And she loves me. And she cares for me. And she's there whenever I need her. You know, people look, she's a woman? Yeah. If I'm going to get a higher power, she's going to be me. She's going to be me. And she's always been there. 8 years. Even when I'm not. Even when, okay, you can sleep late this morning. I got it. She said, oh God, he's off again. And she lets me do it. Because she knows I'll come back. And I'll ask. Those principles I was talking about, each and every one of them is spiritual. Getting honest and feeling good about oneself. That's the most spiritual gift in the world. Telling the truth. I was such an addict in my active addiction that I really didn't know where the truth ended and the lie began. Because I had to make myself believe it. Today, I have a higher power in my life. And she tells me, Bill, you ain't doing it, Bill. Okay. They gave me the ability to be who I was until I found out who I was. I'm also going to talk briefly about something that bothers me. I'm not too sure where it belongs here. And I'm not too sure whether I should say it. And I don't care. I really don't. This thing, it's about this thing called us and them. Okay? My allegiance. I pledge allegiance. My allegiance is to Narcotics Anonymous. I am and always will be grateful to Narcotics Anonymous. I am what you call a purist. Okay? Yeah. One of them.
Yeah.
I am also what you call one of us. You add us and them together, and what happens? You come up with we. Okay? I am sick and I am tired of us tearing down our fellowship. I've been in service to me and to my God and to the fellowship almost from day one. And my recovery, my belief in this fellowship hasn't changed because I took a commitment. And if you think it did, great. Okay. the healing process begins at home. And the only home I got is here. I heal me through my higher power, who I love and cares for me. And the world falls into place. I don't have to, I'm a purist, but I'm not a vigilante, okay? I don't have to defend spiritual principles. This program, these spiritual principles, and I haven't gotten into spiritual principles behind the traditions, but they need no defending. They need no soldiers. The war is over. I'll still carry the message that I carry. But I've learned through my recovery, sometimes painful, sometimes not so painful, that the thoughts that run through my mind come from two places. They either come from my disease, or they come from my recovery. Two places. My recovery has faith. My disease breeds fear. And if I want to come from my disease, I'll get what I put out. I'll get back what I put out. If I want to come from my recovery, I'll also get back what I put out. There's something in this fellowship called 12 traditions. Okay? And there's a phrase that's very active, especially in my life today, this past year. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that would tear us apart, all will be well. And we do the tearing. If I treated anybody else the way I treated myself, if anybody else treated me the way I treat myself, that's it. I kill them. We do the tearing. Our disease tears us off. Our disease of paranoia, our disease of mistrust, our disease. The unity that I felt when I walked into Dharmacharya Sanatana is alive and well. The God that works through conscience is alive and well. That was proven last year's conference. Through all our efforts to sabotage, God still worked. You know, don't worry about it. Oh, I got you. Somebody got to do it. I got you. That's why I wore the Rambo-esque outfit yesterday. It was a joke. You know, I figured somebody was going to throw pot shots at me. I might as well be camouflaged. You know. The third tradition is also spiritually based. the fact that we don't care what or how much we use. The only requirement is to stop messing up your life. That's it. That's it. We don't care. If I was the perfect member when I came in here, it's just another Nazi cult. Yeah. And I wasn't. I identified myself as everything under the sun. Because I was so terrified that I'd leave something out. And it would come up and grab me. Until somebody said, I'm sick and tired of hearing you identify yourself. And they sit down and share it with me. They didn't tell me. They shared it with me. They let me find the reason I identified myself that way is I didn't know who I was. And I was trying more names to see if they fit. And the one name he came up with fit. Addict. That's fit. The autonomy of me comes back, goes together we can. Separately we're powerful, but together we can. Together we can change the world. And I used to sing that song, in protest marches. We can change the world. The whole world's watching. We can change it. There's something in my life that's happening today. Okay? I was talking about earlier about how you can tell whether God's in somebody's life by their eyes. And tombstones. How are you? Dick would call me. How you doing? Fine. Black tombstones, man. Chipping. Oh, falling down. Huh? Today, my eyes are clear. There's a sparkle in them. God lives in them. It scares me sometimes. They say, keep coming back and it gets better. It does. I'm to the point of asking, and then I'm better than duck. Because here it comes. Mason was talking about ballots last night. And I took him wrong. I misunderstood. I had to share it with a friend of mine. If I had the God in my life, I thought he was talking about the kind of tightrope balance that we balance in our act of addiction. That don't step over the line, you'll fall off the tightrope. When I surrendered, when I offered me to the God of my understanding, and she took me in her arms and held me, the war was over. I didn't have to worry about that balance. I didn't have to worry about what I did was wrong or what I did was right. I would know instinctively. I don't have to be paranoid anymore. I don't have to look out windows. I don't have to hide under my bed. I do. I'm an isolationist. And I love it. I got my VCR, my whatever, I'm a Star Trek freak. Somebody's home right now taping Star Trek. But that was all those things were a result of letting God in the mind and getting the fuck out of the way. Just move him. If you want to come along with me, fine, but you better learn how to keep up. Yeah. And that guy that was in his own recovery, I spent 3 years in the jump seat of a gray van going between Harrisburg and D.C. And that guy that was in early part of recovery, that's on a mission from God, that was practicing his disease in his recovery. You know, we can do that. I found out that it's a painful experience that any asshole can stay clean. Okay? I found out that the trick to recovery is putting spiritual principles in your life. The same guy that they kept turning things off, they kept saying, you gotta give us some money. And I kept saying, you really don't understand me, I'm on a mission. And they kept saying, we don't care what kind of mission you're on, you better pay some bills. I had to pay 3 deposits on my phone to get it turned back on. I've gotten the house back. I've gotten the plastic in my pocket. I've become what I hated when I came in this fellowship. I hated one line of the literature when I came in this fellowship. Responsible, productive member of society. That is something I fought against all my life. That is something I am today. I have things. I have friends. I can go anywhere in this fellowship and say, I'm coming out. Bye. But the most important thing I have today is me. And that's the result of God. Of the God of my understanding. That's the result of letting her do the work. She said, I said, I want this. She said, are you sure? Yeah. Really? Yeah. Okay. And then she gives it to me, and I'm like, oh God! But I don't do oh God as much anymore. Okay? I say thank you. I have that spiritual glow about me. And it didn't come from burning bush. It didn't come from the bright lights. It didn't come from church. It didn't come from the psych ward down the street. It didn't come from Thursday and shuffles. It came from me. I was searching for so many years for God in my life. And the man that had 5 years that scared me so much, and I since passed this on to people, the man that had 5 years so much and scared me so much said, dummy. He used to call me dummy all the time. I didn't used to answer and those people call me dummy. They used to call me by name though. Who? says, dummy, stop looking. It's right here. It's in you. And there's a couple other things that I want to share. For me, this is how the program works for me. Okay? That line about there's no growth without pain, for me, it's horseshit. Okay? I can grow today and don't hurt. I can enjoy things today without pain. In the beginning, sure, it was pain. Because the only thing I could experience, the only thing I had to compare it with was my active addiction. And the only way I grew through my active addiction was sticking whatever in my system and going through that pain of those razor blades and that feeling of that low self-esteem. I don't have that today. I went through something about a year ago. Every September, I go through this. I pay house taxes once a year in my house. And I get panicked. I figure I gotta start saving money, you know, in mid-July for the house taxes. So I started eating peanut butter, alright? And the higher power says, dummy. Dick doesn't call me dummy anymore, she does. Let go. I'll give you what you need. No, but then I gotta do this. I eat peanut butter until it's running out of my ears. Didn't save a dime. Don't need peanut butter anymore. The minute I stopped, the money was there. The minute I let go, the money was there. As long as I let go. I am so afraid of letting go, because I'm so afraid of feeling good. I don't think I deserve it. That's what's going off in this head of mine. That's what's going behind this act, in this head. A little attic, a little chair box. He's doing it now. He says, man, you sound like shit. I say, thanks for sharing. And you know what? He shuts up. A man once told me, if I was to give you everything I got today, if I was to zoom, transplant everything I got today, you couldn't stand it. You blow up. You don't believe that. I'm trying to make you feel. I used to try to make you feel the way I feel, and I can't. I can't give it to you. I can share it with you, but I can't give it to you. The road to recovery can be as bumpy or as smooth as you want to. Recovery doesn't have to be painful. But I am so used to pain. Not so much anymore. Because I am so used to feeling good. It's great. I have a hunger on Sunday night. Maybe if God's will on the sand drive fast now, maybe we can make it. Yes, dear. That's the chairperson. And that's where I go to feel good. That's where I go to give it away. But you have to go through the process. You have to live, give time, time. And I'm up here saying all these corny things. And then you're getting corny. I can't back it, right? If you don't believe what I'm saying, watch what I do. Okay? I used to live with, they used to call it Bill's Halfway House. It's a small two-bedroom bungalow, stucco. Some people have been there. And it's barely big enough for three people. I had 13, 14 people living there, recovering addicts. And you talk about insanity? Today it's me and my cat and one roommate down the basement. It's mine. That's why I say, don't listen to what people say. Okay? Don't listen to what I say, please. Watch how God manifests Himself in my life. Watch me. If what I say to you today doesn't match with what I say to you tomorrow, pull me up. Pull me up. Because God works through people. I could not put two words together when I came here. If I did, it was a mistake. Yeah. They bumped into each other, so, excuse me, I'm sorry, it'll never happen again. When I started to do that, be able to put two words together, then people would say, what did he say? What's he talking about? There was a man in this room when I announced my second year. He said, shoot, he doesn't have two years. He's still drooling from the mouth. He's still spilling coffee over five people. Yeah. He just celebrated seven. And I celebrated eight not long ago. That's how God works in my life. That's how God works in my life by my actions. She gives me choices. She said, you can go down this road, or you can go down this road. Now, I suggest this road. Now, go do what you're going to do anyway. And I don't know whether I'm getting sicker or God's working in my life, but I'm choosing her road more and more and more and more and more because it feels good. And I'm not into pain again. I was into feeling good all the time. And the feeling good I'm talking about is not the instant feel good. Feel good that comes from the outside. Feel good that comes from a needle. Feel good that comes from a pill. Feel good that comes from a woman. Feel good that comes from another human being. I'm talking about the feel good inside. And I'm not into beating myself up anymore. And I was searching for an answer to this question for years. And I just can't find it, that's all I know. Such a move to Hawaii, by the way. The one thing, come over to visit. And I came up to my son, Matt, answer me a question. He's got like 15, 14 years in low kind of tomorrow. He said, if I can. He's one of those baby boomers. Got hair down to his. And one leg. So I can't run scambling. He sticks that one leg up my ass sometimes. 8 years clean, he kind of got me writing the steps again. Don't you understand? I did that. Thanks. But I asked him a question. What was God's will for me? How do I know what's God's will for me? How do I know if it's my will or if it's God's will? And he went back and he said, Bill, what's your definition of higher power? And I said, it'd be loving and caring greater than myself. He said, does she love you? I said, yes. He said, would she want to cause pain in your life? I said, no. She wants good things for you, right? I said, yeah. Come on, Mac. Give it up. What are you talking? He's got to keep it real simple for me, right? And he said, write this down. So I'm a good narcotics anonymous member. I've learned to use a pen. So I grabbed a pen and a piece of paper on the back of the whiteboard, which I used to carry in my boots for the first 6 years. And I began to write. He said, God's will for you is that you be happy. That's it. And I said, that's it? He said, what, you want a signed contract? What's it? That's it. He said, you no longer have to die. You no longer have to, is this God's will or is that God's will? You no longer have to take yourself too serious. Because I took the seriousness of my addiction into my recovery. I gotta do it. All I gotta do is show up. All I gotta do is not pick up, go to me, and show up for life. Yeah. And that's basically, and follow the direction of a few chosen people, mainly the sponsor. Follow somebody else's direction, because mine still don't work well enough. I mean, they do, but there's so much more out there for me. There's so much more. I'm an addict. I want everything that's coming to me. And I can have it. I can have it. As long as I can stand it. And I don't know what time it is. It's 12:15. I guess I ran over. If you don't like it, go to a meeting and share about it. I hate these things. I'm supposed to put all my life in 2 hours, and it don't work. If you want what I have to offer, then these are the principles that made my recovery possible. Simple. And they are suggested, but the other way is so rough. The other way is so hard. This way is the easy. I was looking for an easier, softer way for years. And this is it. This is the easiest, softest way that I can find. I'll close in a second, but I want to share something. One other thing that Narcotics Anonymous, you people, and the higher power has given me. As I said, when I came in, I was throwing some mouth, couldn't put the words together, and my active addiction had placed me in a wheelchair. Because it was just easier to pass out in the wheelchair and look cool than it was to fall on your ass on crutches and ask people for help. Today, I'm walking with a walker almost daily. I didn't bring it here. Today, I got muscles in my legs for the first time in years. I walked into somebody's anniversary at my home group and the tears came out. But I even had to be pushed. You know, that's my last holdout. I even had to be pushed into that. I came in looking at a regional meeting one day, looking cool. Riding high. Yeah. And the guy turned me upside down. Turned the wheelchair back. It's one of my home group members. So when the hell are you going to get out of the chair? You've been talking about it for years. When are you going to do something? And I don't know about you, but it's hard as hell for me to look cool. Laying back. Like a beach whale. And that was, what, June? August, I walked into my anniversary. And I got one other thing. Don't give up before the miracle happens. Because I was doing it all my life. I got so close and then said, hell with it. If you don't like what you feel tomorrow, pray about it, go home, go to sleep, and wake up again clean. Knowing that you can change. And that's just God working in your life. Let that power of a spirit grant yourself working in your life. Thanks for letting me share.